Hello again, Warren Olney, back with To The Point. This weekend's deadly violence may have reduced the size of demonstrations on the streets of Tehran, but significant numbers did turn out today to face tear gas and police batons. We'll hear the latest and assess international reactions in the Middle East and the West, including the United States. First, this news update. It appears that at least 20 demonstrators were killed on Saturday on the streets of Iran in clashes with police and militias in civilian clothes. After a quieter Sunday, protesters were back on the streets of Tehran today. Robin Wright is a scholar at the Woodrow Wilson Center, author of Dreams and Shadows, The Future of the Middle East. And Robin Wright, it's always good to talk with you.
Nice to be with you, Warren.
We don't have anybody in Tehran at the moment to update us on what happened today, but it does appear that at least hundreds of demonstrators were out on the street. How deep do you think this goes?
It's clear that we're moving into a time when the opposition is trying to regroup. The regime, using all the tools of the state, including its security forces and the young Basij religious vigilantes, has managed to scare thousands, in fact, the majority of the young people and the protesters from the streets. The numbers that we hear about today are only in the hundreds, but it's still resonating and it still has legs. What will be interesting is to see whether ideas of a nationwide strike, a boycott, a business boycott, take hold, to see if that these cycles of mourning that are so much a part of Shiite tradition end up creating a kind of cycle where people get out to commemorate whoever was killed on Saturday or Sunday on the third day, the seventh day, and the 40th day after the death. These were the very same cycles that were used by the revolutionaries to challenge the Shah. During periods when the Shah's forces were able to repress the revolutionaries, they would often gather for these commemorations of a death of one of their colleagues, and that then led to new confrontations, new deaths, and that sustained the momentum in a year-long revolution that ended up ousting the Shah.
You mentioned the possibility of a strike. That's something the call for which has been attributed to Mr. Mousawi, the titular leader of this opposition. Is it possible to have a general strike in Iran?
Well, I think that business has probably come to a standstill in many parts of Iran anyway. But the question is, do you get people closing up shop completely and signaling to the regime that they share some of the sympathies or they are sympathetic with the protesters? That, again, was something that was critical in the revolution itself when the bazaaris, as they're called, members of the bazaar, sided with the revolutionaries against the Shah. And that was one of the big turning points. So that's another phase. But this, we shouldn't confuse what's happening today with a counter-revolution. They're using many of the tactics of the revolution, but their goals are much much smaller, actually.
What about the Guardian Council conceding today that in some districts there were more votes than there were registered voters? How important is that?
Well, it's important in part because it reflects the scope of the electoral cheating. The Council of Guardians acknowledged that there were voting irregularities in 50 electoral districts involving 3 million votes. There are 46 million voters in Iran, 85% of whom did turn out. 3 million is a very high number, and it indicates that the regime does acknowledge that there were irregularities and has had to go public with them to accommodate the public mood. But it still would indicate that Ahmadinejad has won the election, if that's the correct, is that the figure, at least in their minds. And so that may fuel even more anger among the protesters.
Mr. Mousawi, of course, has been a member of the ruling elite since the revolution established the Islamic Republic. To what extent is the elite itself divided now, and how deeply do the divisions go?
This is one of the most important things about this protest, and that is the way the senior clerics who were revolutionaries arm in arm 30 years ago are now fighting among themselves. And we've seen, for example, not only a former president, Hashemi Rafsanjani, siding with Mousavi, but we've seen a man who was supposed to be the supreme leader until he also began criticizing the regime in 1989, come out and not only say that no one in their right mind would accept the results of this election, but also called on the security forces of the nation not to obey orders that might lead them later to be condemned in the eyes of God. And this is pretty strong language. So we're seeing a split, as we've never seen before, among the clerics who are central to the survival of the Islamic Republic.
And that former candidate who was at one point slated to be supreme leader, what's his name?
Grand Ayatollah Montazeri, who was handpicked by Imam Khomeini, the revolutionary leader, to be his heir apparent. But then he started criticizing the excesses of the revolution and its failures to meet the needs of the people. And just before the imam died, he was stripped of that title. And the imam left no heir apparent behind, which is the role now played by Khamenei.
Okay, Robin Wright at the Woodrow Wilson Center. Stay with us a few moments. We're going to take a very brief break and come back and continue this conversation about what's going on today in Iran. Warren Olney back talking once again with Robin Wright, a veteran diplomatic correspondent, now a scholar at the Woodrow Wilson Center and author of Dreams and Shadows, The Future of the Middle East. You talked a moment ago about the cycles of mourning on the 3rd, 7th, and 40th day after someone is killed. Tell us about this video, which apparently is getting an enormous amount of circulation, of Neda. What does Neda mean, that term? And what about this video showing a young woman covered in blood dying on the street in Tehran?
This is a video that was captured on a cell phone Saturday during the first phase of the violent protests by another protester, and as you pointed out, it has now been seen by millions around the world through YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and lots and lots of websites. Neda was a philosophy student who was out with some of her friends and a professor, and she was shot on the street, and the very brief video shows her stretched out on the street, and as she's her friends are saying, oh, keep your eyes open, we're with you, we'll take care of you, and so forth, and blood begins to stream out of her mouth. It's a very grisly, gruesome video, but it has come to symbolize the price people are willing to pay in Iran. And Neda, which means in Farsi the voice or the calling, has come to symbolize the revolt, and many now talk about Neda's revolution. The controversy is so severe that journalists who are based in Tehran can't talk about her by telephone, and it's her burial was not allowed to be covered by the media.
So there's a possibility then that the mourning for her might take place on the 3rd, the 7th, and the 40th days forthwith and could be a rallying point.
Absolutely. And what's important about Neda is that in Shiite Islam, martyrdom is central to the founding of the faith 14 centuries ago. It had to do with the leader of the Shiites believing that it was better to die fighting injustice than to live with injustice. And he took on a regime that he felt was illegitimate with a handful of supporters, less than 100, knowing that they were going to die as they did. It is an event that is commemorated in the most important commemoration among the Shiites every year. It's called Ashura. And they reenact what happened to him in the same way Christians reenact what happened to Jesus during the crucifixion. And it is a moment of deep passion. And Neda has come to symbolize that essential Shiite belief in fighting for injustice and putting your life on the line. And that's martyrdom that, as we all know, is central to current Iranian foreign policy, current Iranian thinking. It's been and the tactics during their own war against Iraq for 8 years. So she is a symbol, not just a moving symbol of a young woman killed during a protest, but of something that will capture the imagination of all kinds of Iranians.
Is this something that the cleric Montazeri, whom you mentioned before, Ayatollah Montazeri, who almost became the supreme leader, might pick up on, he and others that are now divided from the ruling clique?
Well, the deaths in general, I think, will be of deep concern to many of the clerics. The idea of having an Islamic revolution or an Islamic republic was not universally embraced by the clerics. There were even, some say, the majority were opposed to it for fear that a human state and the flaws of a human state would in turn end up tainting Islam itself. And the idea that the troopers out on the streets are invoking Islam as they kill people will not resonate well among many clerics, and I suspect that the divide among them will deepen, maybe behind the scenes, but it is certainly something that is central to the debate and the future of this crisis.
Robin Wright, formerly with the Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post, now a scholar at the Woodrow Wilson Center. Rami Khoury is director of the Issam Faris Institute for Public Policy and International Affairs at the American University of Beirut. He's also editor-at-large for the Daily Star newspaper. He's based in Beirut. And Rami Khoury, as always, it's good to have you on our program.
Thank you. Nice to be with you and with Robin also.
How is this playing around the Middle East, not just in Shiite with Shiite Muslims, but with the Sunnis as well?
Well, like everything else related to Iran and the Arab world in the last 30 years, it has been divisive, it has been polarizing, and it has accentuated the confusion that defines the mainstream politics of the Arab world, because the Arab world finds itself in a very awkward situation, whether it's the people or the regimes in the Arab world. They've found themselves vis-a-vis Iran in a kind of lose-lose situation. In other words, most of the Arab regimes don't like the Iranian regime. They don't like the Islamic revolutionary leadership in Iran. Most of the Arab regimes have been trying to fight it politically or ward it off. So they would love to see the Iranian regime overthrown, but at the same time, they don't like to see the Iranian regime overthrown by a mass revolution because they know that they could be next. So, you know, if the regime stays, the Arab regimes are not happy. If the Iranian regime is overthrown, the Arab regimes are unhappy. And it's a really bad situation, but it's a situation that the Arab political leaderships of the last two generations have brought on to themselves with their own incompetence and corruption and mismanagement. So it's a very difficult situation for most of the regimes in the Arab world, and that's why most of them are being quiet. I think most of the people in the Arab world are also in a kind of strange situation because public opinion in most of the Arab world has, broadly speaking, they like the Iranian revolution. They liked it because it overthrew an icon of American support in the region 30 years ago, the Shah. Many people like it because the Iranians support the Palestinians and they challenge the Israelis and they challenge the Americans and the West and they defy the UN sanctions. So a lot of things that the Iranian regime has done are pleasing to public opinion in most of the Arab world, not everywhere, but much of the Arab world. So people in the Arab world are not particularly happy to see the Iranian regime overthrown. At the same time, a lot of people in the Arab world are envious of popular activism and defiance of autocratic regimes. So it's really very, very awkward, rather embarrassing for the Arab world. But above all, it shows the almost total bankruptcy of the political morality of the contemporary Arab world and its power structure. And we may see repercussions of this at some point down the road in some places in the Arab world. It's inevitable that you're going to see similar movements of mass protest and defiance in some Arab country at some point. It's completely unrealistic to accept the Arab world to remain the world's last chromosomally docile and acquiescent part of the world, where every single Arab country is stifled by its own political weight of its own autocratic regime. So the repercussions, I think, are probably going to be seen somewhere down the road, just as the Iranian Revolution in 1979 had major implications throughout the region and helping Islamic movements. So may these protests spill over at some point or have some impact in the Arab world down the road. But we have to wait and see what happens in Iran, because it's still not clear where this is going to lead.
Rami Khoury, again, at the Issam Fares Institute for Public Policy and International Affairs in Beirut. Gershom Gorenberg is a Jerusalem-based historian and journalist. His latest book is The Accidental Empire, Israel and the Birth of the Settlements, 1967 to 77. He blogs at southjerusalem.com. And thank you very much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
What's the reaction so far in Israel?
Well, it's a very interesting shift because before the election, I think that conservative commentators and politicians were actually apprehensive of a Mousavi victory. They were afraid that putting a good face on Iran might reduce world pressure on Iran over its nuclear program. But I think that that's shifted over the last few days because the protests have taken the situation far beyond where a simple electoral change would have led. Clearly, the protests have gone way beyond what Mousavi himself intended as a candidate. And so there's a lot of hope when people are watching the events in Tehran and elsewhere in Iran. There's the hope that that Iran might moderate, that a regime might come into power there that would be more willing to negotiate with the rest of the world. And there's also the hope that Iran's satellites or clients elsewhere in the Middle East, particularly Hezbollah in Lebanon, will be weakened by this situation and that would be contribute to Israel's security.
Okay, excuse me. Gershom Gorenberg in Jerusalem. I'm going to interrupt for a moment because we've just been joined from Tehran by Borzu Daragahi, who reports for the Los Angeles Times from there. We've had a terrible time trying to get through to him today, and he's only available with us for a few minutes. Borzu Daragahi, as always, welcome. What's your take on what happened today on the streets of Tehran?
Well, there was not a lot, actually, that happened. There was a few attempts, apparently, at gelling protests together, protest rallies, but they were quickly dispersed by the security forces who are coming down in force against people. There were semi-official pro-government militias arrayed around key downtown squares, as well as riot police in specific locations who were preventing anyone from gathering together.
I've heard in some other reports that some of the police are wavering, that they're telling people that they don't want to hit them, don't want to beat them, please go home. Are those credible reports?
No, absolutely. And I wouldn't even call it wavering. It's a little bit more than that. They just don't believe in the orders they've been given. But, you know, they're still professionals, and they're going to pursue those orders. And that goes with most of the uniformed folks. Even the most ornery-looking riot cops, they're well-trained. Many of them are as diverse in their opinions as the Iranian people. And, you know, who knows who they voted for, but they still have to follow orders.
We heard a moment ago that the Ayatollah Montasari, who I take it is a very, very senior cleric, has said to people that they shouldn't obey those orders. They certainly shouldn't kill anybody, lest they subsequently be subject to the negative judgment of God, if I can say that in as neutral a way as possible. Do you think that's the case? Or, excuse me, will he be heard by those people?
Ayatollah Montazeri is a venerated figure among intellectuals and people who know Iran's history and are a little bit older, but I don't think he has a real platform to get his views out, first of all, because television is controlled by the supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. I don't know how much authority and how deep his authority is in Iranian society.
What about the Revolutionary Guard? Are they themselves divided? You said they have to obey orders, and yet they may have very mixed feelings about it.
Absolutely, and especially among the rank and file people who are enlistees in the Revolutionary Guard, just regular soldiers, regular military folks. It's not the dreaded organization that many people think it is. It's just a branch of the military that has evolved into being even more of a normal bureaucracy with all of the intricacies and contradicting viewpoints that implies.
You've said again and again on our program for the past couple of weeks that we're in uncharted waters, and I don't want to pin you down by asking you for some kind of prediction, but does it appear that the violence that we saw over the weekend has, at least for the moment, quelled the protest? Do you think that they will come back with much force, or is there just simply no way to tell?
Well, I think that the protest movement is at this point, you know, kind of leaderless and motiveless. What are they pursuing? You know, now that the Supreme Leader says that if you go up against me, you're going up against the Islamic Republic. What is the goal of Mousavi? What is the goal of this whole movement? Where is it going? And why should someone join that movement? And what chance does it have for success, given the state of the leadership of that movement? So I think a lot of people are evaluating at this point, trying to see where things are headed, what Mousavi says and does, and what his vision is. That's still not clear. And if he has a vision, maybe people will sacrifice themselves, their liberty, and their lives even for that vision. But there's nothing articulated yet.
Any chance for a general strike?
Well, I hear rumors that some companies have already called a strike, or have gone on strike. Some employees have gone on strike. But, you know, one thing that's kind of interesting, it does very much seem like this whole crisis has really slowed down the economy,
right,
and a lot of businesses are not opening and so on. So maybe strike would mean nothing.
Borju Daragahi, as always, many thanks for being with us from Tehran. Again, Borju Daragahi reporting from there for the Los Angeles Times. Robin Wright, are you still with us?
I am.
Great. I think that Borju Daragahi confirmed just about everything that you said and raised a similar point to yours at the very beginning. You said the opposition was regrouping, that it was, many people were very frightened. He said that there are real questions as to exactly what the goal is at this point. What's your take?
I think that there is a quandary right now. As they realize that this has escalated from just an issue over the disputed election to a challenge to the system itself, the question is, how do you take that to the streets, or what do you do to make that point in the face of such overwhelming physical opposition from the police, the riot police, the religious vigilantes, and the host of people who are trying to block them from taking any action? This is not something that's going to continue at the kind of dramatic pace it did over the past 10 days. We're likely to see fits and starts. But I think the bottom line of what's happened is Iran has turned a corner. There's no way that this can be completely quelled. We may well indeed see the new right prevail and Ahmadinejad get a second term. But it's clear to the regime and it's clear to the outside world how deep opposition and alienation is among so many parts of Iranian society. What's different from 1999, when students began a protest, is that now you have a body with a head, and you have a coalition that includes a wide cross-section of Iranian society, whether it's two former presidents and a prime minister, or feisty women who are the first mass generation of educated women. You see taxi drivers and famed filmmakers. This is the intelligentsia. You have just a wide cross-section of people who are taking a very important stand and also echoing the fact that this is not just about an election anymore. It's about the system itself.
Well, Robin Wright, as always, and many thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.